Let's call the next case.
Yes, Judge. The next case is number 21-1913, United States versus Roberto Reyes Correa. At this time, would Mr. Carrion please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. This is Samuel Carrion on behalf of the appellant Roberto Reyes Correa. May it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You may. Please go ahead.
Your Honors, the district court denied Mr. Reyes a fair hearing by failing to properly notify him that it had considered extra record evidence before the final revocation hearing.
And let me ask, that was evidence the defense and the government had before the sentence. So everybody had, it's not evidence that nobody knew existed, am I correct?
Well, there was reference in the record, specifically in a probation officer's motion and in some type of the prosecution's proffer during the preliminary hearing, that a video of Mr. Reyes existed, specifically under the influence of controlled substance. However, it's unclear if the video that the district court viewed was in fact the same video. And certainly when the district court viewed this video, this was before there had been any adjudication of guilt. This was prior to the final revocation hearing. And I think that brings me to the point of not providing Mr. Reyes a meaningful opportunity to make a decision as to whether or not he was going to contest the final revocation hearing. He obviously decided not to contest the final revocation hearing, but had he known that the district...
Yeah, but probation referenced two videos, right?
Probation, it's my understanding that probation disclosed two videos to defense counsel before the hearings. However, in its motion, the probation officer mentions there being videos, plural, and so it's really unknown the duration of the video that the district court screened, what was said, what was heard, if there was any type of commentary that was overlaid with that.
Is there any evidence that there were videos aside from the two that are referenced in probation's report?
There are no evidence. The only thing that we have, Your Honor, is the court immediately before pronouncing the 36-month statutory maximum sentence, referencing that there are videos of Mr. Reyes apparently acting under the influence of synthetic marijuana, acting erratically, and that the court, in fact, has seen it or has seen the video. So we have no indication of how this evidence, we would assume that this evidence, the fair inference would be that this evidence was passed directly to the fact finder by the principal fact witness in this case.
Let me also ask, at the time, the court stated that the video depicted Reyes acting, and I quote, acting erratically and the effect would appear to be synthetic marijuana. Counsel from your office did not object to that description, nor was there any objection at that point. Am I correct?
You're correct, Your Honor, but in this, it's important to know when this was pronounced. This was the defense counsel found out about this when the court was pronouncing sentence. And I'd reiterate that if the defense counsel had known that the court had actually taken part in an ex parte screening of evidence, then the calculus as to whether or not to contest the hearing would have been markedly changed. For example, Mr. Reyes had family in the audience at that final revocation hearing. It's our understanding that it was a family member who provided that video to the probation officer. So part of that, the effect of that video could have been blunted by perhaps calling one of the family members as a witness to contextualize what was depicted in that video. There could have been even the probation officer himself being called to the stand to talk about not only about how that
but
video...
But I think we're trying to pin down prior notice to the defendant. And even though the court didn't make mention of it until the point of sentencing, you're not contesting that the defendant had... Did the defendant have copies of the video?
Well, again, Your Honor, the defendant did have copies of two videos, but our problem is that the defendant did not know about this ex parte screening, and he did not know if the videos that he had were, in fact, the same videos or the same length or the same quality of videos that was in his possession.
Those two videos, did that come up at the preliminary hearing as well?
So the prosecutor proffered that there was a video which had been disclosed to defense counsel depicting Mr. Reyes under the influence of a controlled substance, and I don't think I'm splitting hairs here when I say that there's one thing. The probation officer said that that it appeared appeared that he was under the influence of a strong controlled substance. The district court takes the, another allegation that was contained in one of the motions, that he was using synthetic marijuana and was acting erratically, and imports that into his viewing of the video. And so I think that that's also a bit of nuance that could have been addressed by defense counsel had he had she been given the opportunity before the revocation hearing. And I think it's particularly problematic, Your Honor, and I do want to note that there were other errors with this sentence, in the sense that there was a sentencing recommendation attributed to the probation officer of 36 months, which was not the case. Defense counsel found out that the recommendation was actually a guideline sentence of 9 months.
But let me ask why, and I, that's another issue you bring in, which I wanted to ask about, because the judge has discretion to sentence. There could be a recommendation for 9 months. There could be a recommendation for 0 months. There could be a recommendation for 24 months. But the judge always has the Article III authority to make that recommendation. And I believe what you're suggesting in your client's brief is suggesting is that that should be a factor that is weighed when any judge does not follow a sentence recommendation. Am I correct?
Well, I think it's noteworthy that the parties themselves both recommended 12 months. Probation recommended 9 months. What took this case out so much outside of the heartland to warrant a 27-month upward, a 400% upward variance for what amounted to grade C technical violations? These violations consisted of not of telling the probation officer about a traffic ticket 1 day too late, not attending a treatment session. This is a person with mental health and drug use disorders. And obviously the picture, the video of him using controlled substances. What took this conduct so much outside of the heartland of a grade C violation that would have justified such a severe sentence? And I think the sentencing court's rationale or pronouncement doesn't answer that question. I think it's also instructive, and I don't want to conflate the issues here, but if we're going to talk about the sentencing pronouncement, I will say that there was very similar language in Serrano Berrios, which this court obviously found the language at sentencing insufficient, where there's a talk about, the sentencing court talks about the extinguishment of resources on Mr. Reyes. And I think that's important because the probation officer never said, and in none of his motions does he ever say, that the probation office has extinguished resources. And if we look at the probation officer's recommendation of 9 months, I think a fair inference that the court can draw from that is that the probation officer contemplated that this person would be under supervised release again. He had 4 years to go.
So what you would have liked to do, ideally, would have been to call that, call that probation office to testify at the hearing as to why he recommended 9 months. Am I correct?
Right, and I think, Your Honor, if we had known about the screening, and I think this is why the video was so important, if we had known about the screening, I think that completely changes the calculus. The probation officer would have been called, if not to ask about the recommendation, certainly to explore the depth of the ex parte communication, whether or not the video was the same. And so I think that speaks to the prejudice here.
So let me ask you this. So help me here. When the pre-sentence report is handed to the court, I mean, there's no doubt that the protocol is that the court can discuss it with the probation officer. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. But
so is the infirmity here that more than normal transpired, specifically the screening of the video, and that should have been disclosed at the beginning of the sentencing hearing, because your client admitted to violating, but you admitted at a time when it wasn't clear to you that the court had seen the film?
That's right, Your Honor, and I think it's also important to note that the difference between a Rule 32 sentencing proceeding and these revocation proceedings, and I think the government cites Bramley, but the Rule 32 proceeding and the role that a probation officer plays is very different. In the revocation context, the probation officer takes on a much more adversarial posture. In fact, it's the probation officer, as it was in this case, who's the primary fact witness, who's driving the push to incarcerate. And so this is also someone who, over the course of months, if not years, in this case I believe it was a year, has contact with the supervisee. It's not a situation where a probation officer is just writing a PSR report in the presence of counsel, and that may be the only time the probation officer even deals with the defendant. In this case, we have a history leading up to this, leading up to these revocation proceedings, and I think that just increases the chance that harmful communication can come out. And I don't attribute any ill will, or it can be inadvertent, but just the nature of that supervisory relationship increases the chance that information, harmful information, can come out. In this case, we have a fact witness presenting evidence directly to the fact finder outside of the prosecutorial, outside of the prosecutor, who oftentimes, through his legal or her legal training, can serve as a gatekeeping or gatekeeper of certain evidence that may not be reliable or that may not be admissible. But this, we have a circumvention and essentially a usurpation of the prosecutor, and with this ex parte communication. And we reference in our brief, I believe it is.
All right, so you're saying up until the presentation of the petition to revoke, that's okay. But once the court has issued an arrest warrant, the communication between probation and the court should be limited.
Yes, Your Honor, and I want to be clear. I recognize that the probation office is located within the judicial branch, and I recognize that probation officers can provide advice and counsel. But I think, yes, once the revocation process and there's an arrest warrant issued, I think now we're coming outside of the role of the probation officer as trying to rehabilitate the defendant, and now we're talking about someone who's actively driving the push.
Let me ask, and this is my experience of probably almost 20 years dealing with probation at the district court level. This may have been the case in this particular case, but there are so many other cases, I have to say, based on experience, that the judge may have been inclined to revoke or to sentence, and you have a probation office who, based on those communications, informs the court, this guy, this client is really doing what he needs to do. He needs another opportunity. And, countless times I did not follow the original recommendation. I've gone below. Of course, other times I went above. So wouldn't this work both ways? Because there may be times you have, again, here you're concerned about this particular client, but going down the road, is this something that would preclude then probation officers from bringing favorable evidence to district judges?
Well, Your Honor, and I do see that I'm out of time, but
please answer that.
To answer your question, yes, I do believe that I understand that it would work both ways, but I think daylight in this, particularly in this revocation context, is always a prudent measure. And in this case, like we referenced the Aspinall case in the Second Circuit, where the district court judge was upfront about an ex parte meeting and said, I met with the probation officer, I received information, I'm putting it out there, it's not going to affect my decision, but I think the party should know. I think if the district court here had done that, we wouldn't be here today. But that's not what happened.
And one more question. Do we know at what point in the proceeding the court viewed the video? In other words, do we know if the court viewed it before the arrest warrant was issued or subsequent thereto?
Your Honor, the record doesn't tell us when this video happened. The first mention of a video is in the July 2021 motion. This final revocation hearing occurred in October.
Do you think it matters?
No, Your Honor. As long as the court had informed Mr. Reyes before the final revocation hearing, I think that would have been proper. Even if it was the day of the hearing and the court had said, I viewed this video, I think you guys should know about this, I think the calculus would have been changed. And I do think the case that Mr. Reyes would have put on, as opposed to just a passive, we're going to not contest, there's a joint, or at least both parties are recommending the same sentence, I think that calculus becomes completely different had that been disclosed. Unfortunately, it wasn't. And, Your Honor, if I can just conclude briefly, the right to be heard, this court has said in Brezon, the right to be heard is meaningless, is not a reality unless one is informed. Certainly, Mr. Reyes was not informed. Due process required more in this case, and for that reason, we ask that the court vacate his revocation sentence and remand to a different judge.
I have one very brief question, but at page 43, footnote 13, of your client's brief, there's reference to a U.S. DOJ press statement that a probation officer, federal probation officer, pled guilty to providing false statements regarding the performance, I assume, of the defendant or supervisee. You're not suggesting that occurred here, correct?
No, again, I just want to be clear. We're not attributing any ill will or any malice on the probation officer. We're just saying that probation officers like you and I, Your Honor, are people, and they are subject to their own biases and prejudices, and their being so intimately involved in the supervision process presents, again, that risk of harmful information coming out during ex parte meetings.
Okay, let me ask you another question. I'm sorry to drag you on, but one of the things you mentioned in your brief is that after the sentence had been imposed, you actually, or somebody from your office, went to the probation office, interviewed the particular probation officer, and that probation officer, basically that's when he said, yeah, it should have been 9 months. I recommended 9 months, it was not 30. So your office finds about this post-sentence, and it's one of the issues that it's raised now on appeal. What if that were to be the norm now, what would impede the U.S. attorney from, let's assume a judge gives the client zero or probation, U.S. attorney can appeal also and say there's procedural error or substantive error and interview the probation office as well. Wouldn't this work both ways and, just prolong litigation beyond the extremes?
Well, I think that would assume that the district court or the sentencing court pronounced what the probation officer's recommendation was. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, and I think it would also assume that the district court misspoke. In this case, we have both, and so I think it's a unique situation where we don't have the probation officer testifying at the final revocation hearing, yet we have the district court espousing what its recommendation was and espousing it in a way that was actually not correct. And the district court did update the record, amend the record to reflect that that was not the probation officer's recommendation. However, the district court didn't say, however, I would have sentenced him to the same sentence. And I think that that's significant as well.
Okay, thank you very much. And you have 3 minutes to take for rebuttal.
Thank you. Your
Honor. Any of my colleagues have any questions for us?
No.
Okay, so Mr. Bornstein again, your turn.
Good morning again, Judge Helpe, and may it please the court, David Bornstein on behalf of the United States. The district court did not err, let alone plainly err, by communicating with a probation officer ex parte. That's because the record shows that, or does not indicate, that anything in those communications constituted facts that were new to the defendant.
How do we know?
We know it, Your Honor, because all that the defendant has pointed to are two things. One, a video related to his drug use violation, and two, wording that we know contained the probation officer's 9-month sentence recommendation. To start with the wording, Your Honor, the sentence recommendation was a perfectly appropriate thing for the court, for the probation officer to give, and that doesn't constitute a new fact. That simply constitutes the probation officer's analysis. And it is the probation officer's job to provide the court with all the information analysis it needs to do its job. And a problem only arises when a probation officer provides new facts to the court and then the court relies on it, and those facts have not been previously disclosed to the defendant. So the probation officer's wording, if I could start with that, all that the record shows, this is addendum 10 and 11, is that it included the probation officer's 9-month sentence. Anything further would be pure speculation, and this court said in United States against Bramley that speculating as to what a probation officer turned over to the court is a fruitless exercise that this court will not indulge in. The defendant nonetheless indulges in it, and he assumes that the wording must have also included analysis in support of that 9-month sentence. Even so, Your Honor, that was fine. And that was fine because the rule in this circuit, and indeed every other that I know of, is that a probation officer may provide ex parte the court with advice and analysis. This follows directly from this court's holding in United States against Fraza. That is 106 F3rd 1050. Now, in that case, the defendant was asking for a downward adjustment in his sentence on the ground that he had played a minor role in the offense. This court's opinion says that that brass ring was within his reach. The court seemed disposed to granting the downward adjustment, and the government was not opposing it. But at that moment, the probation officer interrupted the sentencing, went up to the judge, had an ex parte communication with him, after which the judge denied the downward adjustment. On appeal, the defendant was livid that this ex parte communication occurred. This court, however, found no error. stating that it is the probation officer's job to provide the court with all the judgment and analysis it needs in order to do its job, and the probation officer is just, quote-unquote, doing his job, and, quote, anything less would have been a dereliction of duty, close quote.
But we've also said that the defendant has a right to know what the court is relying on.
Yes, Your Honor, factually.
Get to the video.
All right. So turning to the video, nothing in the record shows that the video contained any new facts because the video and its contents had been disclosed to the defendant months before the final revocation hearing. The video is first mentioned in the record.
Sufficiently clear that those two videos referenced earlier had to be the ones that the court reviewed?
Yes, it is. And you can see that by first going to the probation officer's motion where the video is first mentioned. This is Appendix 61, where the probation officer says, on July 5th, 2021, we received videos depicting Mr. Reyes Correa under the strong effect of a controlled substance. And then at the preliminary revocation hearing, the prosecutor notes for the record that the video had been disclosed. This is page 72 of the appendix. The probation officer has video showing the defendant under the influence of controlled substances. That video was provided to the defense as per the probation officer's representation to the government. When you hear the district court's explanation or description of the video when it pronounces its sentence, this is page 89, it becomes clear that the video that the court saw was the one that probation had, which was described in the motion, and then turned over months earlier. The court says, in July 2021, the probation officer learned that defendant Reyes was acting erratically and under the effect of what appeared to be synthetic marijuana in a video which the probation officer viewed. The court has also viewed the video. But you do not have to take my word that that is what the record reflects, because the defendant himself admitted as much in his brief. Here, I'd like to turn the court's attention. Well, I know where it is. It is on page 26 of the defendant's opening brief. Now, there the defendant says, and I quote, just before pronouncing its upward variance, the court arrived at the July motion that referenced a video that purported to show Mr. Reyes under synthetic cannabinoid influence. For the first time, the judge revealed publicly that someone had showed him the video. Right there, the defendant is predicating his argument. This is his statement of the facts on the idea that the video that the judge saw was the one that was disclosed in the probation officer's motion. On page 28, in the footnote, the defendant says, the defense received disclosure in August 2021 of two videos appearing to depict Mr. Reyes in a disoriented state. It is unclear whether one or both of these videos were seen by the court. It doesn't matter. The point was, right there again, he's basing his opening brief off of the idea that the video had been disclosed to him, he just didn't know which one the court saw. And if that weren't enough, I'd direct the court's attention to his argument on page 46 and 47. And I'm quoting now. On the ex parte evidence point, a question may remain. What harm is there if it, meaning the video, was disclosed to the defense? Now onto page 47,
so
he says,
just to be clear,
yes, Your Honor.
The government's position is that as long as the probation reports indicate that there's a piece of evidence that probation has seen and relied upon, and that we should assume that the court has access to it, and that it's okay. Whether the court specifically discloses at the beginning of the hearing that it has reviewed it or not, we should presume that the court, being on notice that it exists, has reviewed it?
No, Your Honor. We have it's a layered argument.
Okay.
The first is that we believe you can infer from this record and the defendant's own opening brief that the video that the court saw was one that had been disclosed to him. And under this court's case law, what a defendant is entitled to when it comes to notice is of the fact that the court then relies upon at sentencing. It's not the fact that the court will rely upon it at sentencing. It's not that the fact that the court is even aware of it, but simply the underlying fact. Any trial judge knows that there are many cases where there is voluminous discovery and disclosure, not all of which, in fact, usually very little of it, actually ends up in the record of a case. It's handed over to the defense counsel, it may be provided to the judge, and that is sort of the body of facts that the parties know of when it comes to sentencing. But let me be more clear on that point. We believe that it is very clear from this court's precedent in United States against Canada, which was from 1992, that when it comes to notice, what a defendant entitled to is the underlying fact, not whether the fact is in the record previously, not whether even the court will rely upon it. Now, in Canada, which is 960 F3rd 263, a 1992 decision of this court, the district court, sua sponte, enhanced the defendant's sentence upon finding that he was a supervisor of his offense. The court did so based on outside of the record evidence. And the defendant complained he wasn't aware that the court was considering whether he was a supervisor. He wasn't aware that the court was going of the evidence, or he didn't have sufficient notice of the evidence because it was from outside of the record. And he also complained that he didn't have notice that the court would be considering evidence from outside the record. This court found no error. And in fact, it said even if those three things were true, and the key ones for this case's purposes is that the fact did not appear in the record of his case, and he did not know that the court would be relying upon this outside of record fact, this court found, and I quote, however, Canada was not, that's the defendant, Canada was not ignorant of the information upon which the court relied in sentencing him. Hence, he was not denied a meaningful opportunity to respond. That's pages 267 and 268. Now, the defendant points out, this was in our 28-J letters, that the reason why the defendant was not ignorant of that outside-of-record material was because it was actually his testimony at the co-defendant's trial. But this court did not rely upon that fact in its holding. It did not care about why he was not ignorant of the facts. It was simply that he was not ignorant of the facts. And so, to sum it all up for you, Judge Thompson, under this court's case law, a defendant is simply entitled to prior notice or awareness of the facts that the court ultimately relies on. It doesn't even have to be the exact medium in which the court relies upon the facts. So, again, I believe that the record shows and that the defense conceded in his opening brief that the video had been previously disclosed to the defendant. It's really only in his 28-J response from a few days ago that the defendant tries to walk back that underlying premise of his opening brief, and he says it is now, quote-unquote, an unfounded assumption that the video that the court saw was one that had been disclosed to him. But even if that were the case, he doesn't prevail. He doesn't prevail under this court's case law in the United States against Kenny. Kenny is a decision by this court. It's 756 F3rd 36 from 2014. In Kenny, the district court denied a sentencing claim by the defendant on finding that he was a ringleader and mastermind of the underlying heist that he was convicted of. The court made that finding based upon its knowledge of recorded conversations between the defendant and informants that had been admitted into evidence at a co-defendant's trial. The defendant on appeal said that he was not aware that the court was going to be relying upon that evidence, and he didn't have sufficient notice of it. This court, again, found no error, but it didn't do so on the ground that the recordings themselves had been turned over to the defendant, but on the fact that the recordings had been summarized in an affidavit that was attached to the criminal complaint at the beginning of his case. And the court said that summary of the affidavit apprised the defendant that these conversations existed and that they showed that he was indeed the mastermind and ringleader of the offense. And so this court held, I'm now quoting from page 50, the information, therefore, could hardly have taken Kenny by surprise at his sentencing. We accordingly find no error. And here, the only fact found by the judge when it came from its viewing of the video was that the defendant had been acting erratically under what appeared to be synthetic marijuana. That is an exact description of the defendant's conduct from the probation officer's motion on appendix page 61, and it's one that he admitted to when he did not contest that allegation in the motion. The idea that not contesting his admission is now a holding of this court from Portel Marquez.
I see your time is running a little bit low. Could you turn to the sentence issue and also maybe discuss what you make of Seriano Berrios?
Yes, Your Honor. So the 36-month sentence in this case was a defensible result. This was the defendant's third revocation of supervised release. On this particular revocation, he was on his third probation officer's motion notifying the court of his violations, and he was on his sixth motion overall. The defendant by this stage had shown himself to be a serial violator of the terms of his release. And by the way, this didn't simply begin at supervised release. Recall, he was violated very quickly on pretrial release for, again, not following the conditions of his release. So now at this stage, after years, the judge knew that this defendant was a serial violator. Now, the court eschewed any further supervised release term. This was actually something that the defense argued for, saying that, you know, the defendant's issues would not be solved by further supervised release. So the court was presented with an upwardly variant sentence. The parties both argued for 12 months. Actually, in objecting to the 36-month sentence, defense counsel conceded that 18 months was appropriate, and I believe this court can find that 36 months is appropriate. This case is very similar to the one in Soto Soto, United States against Soto Soto, where similarly, given a defendant who kept violating the terms of his release again and again, this court held that it was a defensible result for the court to conclude that instead of giving him some prison time and more supervised release, to simply cut off supervised release, to punish him for breaking the trust of the court by giving a maximum sentence.
Let me also ask, and I think it's evident from the record, but this is George Bezosa who's had this defendant since he pled guilty, he was sentenced to original offense, and then to all the other violations. It's not judges who don't know, or a new judge came in, really didn't know about it. It's the same judge longitudinally who's had this defendant.
Yes.
And
who's seen him
over and over.
Who's seen him from the violations of his pretrial release to his, you know, third revocation on supervised release. Now, Judge Montecalvo, you asked about Serrano Berrios. We believe this case is distinguishable for multiple reasons. First, Serrano Berrios, the claim of error there was preserved, and so it was reviewed for abuse of discretion. And indeed, all that the court said is that it couldn't tell whether the comment that the court made there about, I think it was extinguishing a release source, whether that was something that came from the probation officer or was the judge's own independent conclusion. The court, however, was nonetheless vacating and remanding for a separate reason. And that separate reason was the district court's reliance on the arrest record, arrest that did not result in conviction. And the court said things that indicated that it had committed an error by relying upon arrests and equating them with guilt. So the court was vacating and remanding anyways. Its only concern about the extinguishing of a release source was that it didn't, you know, wasn't clear based upon the record whether that was coming from probation or the court. Here, however, the defendant never objected to the court's consideration of his time on treatment, nor did he object to that specific finding by the court. So it's reviewed for plain error. And under plain error, if it's not clear whether it came from the court or probation, there's simply no error on the record. But I want to be clear. It doesn't matter if it came from probation. And the reason why is if the probation officer had concluded, that the defendant had extinguished his drug treatment regimen, first of all, that was something that the defense agreed to. They said, you know, further drug treatment for this defendant won't accomplish anything. We need to put him into a private program for mental health. Second, that was an appropriate analysis on behalf of the probation officer. That's not a new fact that exists out there in the world. That is simply the probation officer's conclusion. And third, I believe it's clear from this record that that was probably the independent judgment of the court. The prosecutor throughout the preliminary and final revocation hearings had what my friend calls the opportunity narrative, which is that the defendant kept violating and violating and violating, despite the fact that probation was doing everything it could to present him with the resources he needed to get better.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We want to sum up in 15 seconds.
Yes, Your Honor. So in the end, we asked this court to affirm. There's simply no indication in the record that new facts were given to the defendant that he's not previously aware of. There's nothing wrong with the wording that falls under the probation officer's ability to give sentencing recommendations. And I actually want to make one final point, if I may, and it's an important one.
Very briefly.
An idea came up that perhaps probation officers should be called to the stand at sentencing to testify to the sentence recommendation and analysis that they gave to the district judge. I think that would be very wrong-headed. This falls under Rule 32E3, where the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure actually expressly say that a district court may command that a probation officer's sentence recommendation remain confidential. And the reason for that is given in the 1974 Advisory Committee notes, where they say that it would negatively impact the effectiveness of probation officers if the defendant, who's under their supervision, were to realize that the probation officer believes that they deserve X sentence for Y reasons. There's a reason why the probation officer may give this advice and analysis confidential. It's because it protects their effectiveness and, you know,
And let me ask you, just following up on that, and I ask opposing counsel,
sure.
If we were to rule that that can be done and probation officers can be called, U.S. Attorney's Office then would get the same opportunity every time, there's a really lengthy revocation, let's assume, and then somebody gets 0 months, or, you know, and then you'd be able to do the same thing, and appeal and say bring it back. You know, what's good for the goose would be good for the gander, correct?
Yes, but not only that, it's really an untenable rule. If whenever a defense attorney or, you know, whenever a party can go to the probation officer and try to find something that may have been before the court that was not revealed beforehand, and then to come up and say, we have reversible error, that's simply not right. The rule set down by this court is a good one. If the defendant was aware of the fact going in, he's not entitled to advance notice that the court knows of the fact or rely on the fact. And finally, that follows as well from the Supreme Court's holding in Irizarry against the United States in 2008, where defendants were arguing that they should be provided with advance notice of facts that a court will rely on in granting a variant sentence. And the Supreme Court said no. There's no due process right to advance notice. Rather, if a defendant is taken by surprise by some fact that comes up at sentencing, the proper thing to do is for the defendant to ask for a continuance so that he may then have the time to regroup and argue against that fact. But okay. Here there is no need for a continuance because, again, the video was disclosed.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Mr. Carrion, you have 3 minutes for rebuttal, and please identify yourself again.
Thank you, Judge Helpe. Samuel Carrion again on behalf of the appellant, Roberto Reyes Correa. Your Honor, Mr. Bornstein points out that that these facts were disclosed and the medium is not important. And I respectfully disagree. I believe that the court in Ramos Carreras dealt with a very similar situation. In that case, there were state court allegations that appeared that did not appear in the record. I don't think anyone could argue that Ramos Carreras was not aware of the state court allegations that existed, but it was the district court's using those outside of the record allegations during its sentencing pronouncement that this court held was improper. And I would also add that the government petitioned for rehearing in that case, asking the court to amend its definition of new facts or new information to include information that had not been disclosed to the parties, and the court declined to do that.
When the probation made it clear that it had used these videos and made that fact known to the court, why is it unreasonable for us to assume that the court would have been made aware of the very same facts?
Well, I think, Your Honor, it...
The only difference is that the court was made aware of facts that something existed, and the court then probed a little bit deeper to explore exactly the parameters of what was in the video.
Well, I think what perhaps government counsel's confusing is that we're not saying that that there was a dispute as to the existence of a video, but I think it's certainly problematic that there was a screening and the presentation of evidence that was outside of the public revocation process. In these cases, Morrissey and Gagnon have been around for half a century for a reason, to bring these types of the presentation of evidence into the daylight. And I will note that it's not about the existence of the video, because if we look at the court's decision in Zavala Marti, there was an ex parte meeting regarding an incident that happened at a jail, in which a defendant apparently had interrupted a PSR interview and had asked for another co-defendant's papers. And it wasn't the fact, defense counsel was well aware that this incident had occurred. In fact, she had prepped and interviewed the defense attorney who was present during that interview. But it was the fact that she was alerted that the judge who was presiding over her client's case had met with the probation officer specifically about this incident. And that was the error, that she didn't have notice about this ex parte meeting. And I would submit that this is the analogous situation here, where it wasn't the video, it was the screening of the video.
But how do we know that? We know the court looked at the video. You characterize it as a screening.
Yes,
the court may have said, put the video on my desk and just looked at it. We don't know if there was any commentary. We just know the court looked at the video.
Well, I think the record illuminates your concern, Your Honor, in the sense that we do know that there was certain wording that was also submitted to the district court, and that comes out in the district court's order.
Yeah, but that's a different issue.
Right, Your Honor, but there was certain communication surrounding this particular supervisee prior to the final revocation hearing. And I'd ask the question, Your Honor, what if Mr. Reyes had contested this hearing, the court would have already seen video and would have already been tainted by that ex parte, by that viewing of evidence outside of the public forum. And I think that's the crux of what we're arguing.
But how is that different from the court being advised that he didn't go to his counseling meetings or any other factual elements that are presented in the revocation report? How is that one fact different from the other fact that the court is presented with in those petitions?
Well, Your Honor, I do think I think the medium does matter. And I think the medium in the sense of the video. A video, as they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. If the court is – I see that I'm out of time, but I may finish. If the court is screening a video, we don't know how long the court's looking at this video, how many times, what's being said. There's just a lack of transparency in this that Bramley doesn't address. That's a Rule 32, and Brother Counsel mentions Rule 32. This is governed – this is a different – this is not a sentencing proceeding. Probation is not in the neutral marshaler of facts role that it is in the sentencing proceeding. This is somebody who has a dog in the fight. And in this case, it was to revoke Mr. Reyes' supervised release. And in this case, we saw the result of that, a 36-month sentence for technical violations. And so with that in mind, I think the district court has to tread very carefully to prevent certain harmful information getting disseminated through these back channels. And unfortunately, I think that's what happened here, and that's what was the reversible error.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, you're excused. Let's call the last case, the civil case.
Yes, Judge.